It's not the end of the world. You know, you can do it if you want to. It's like about what you say to yourself to excuse your actions and, you know, your mental state, knowing full well that, like, or maybe you don't know. It's just like knowing that you need to try. You can do it if you want to. But if you don't, that's okay. And then you try again later and you just kick the can down the road. And that's not the end of the world. You know, you think that you're going to know when you've hit the end of the world, but you won't. And I just kind of sang that, not knowing what it meant at first, into this vocoder and laid it down and kind of went, gave it one more pass, and then like realized what I was saying, you know, and like just processed all that loss in the moment.
Here we are with Billy Brouse from Papadocio and Brother. Billy, my man, how are you today?
Good. Good,
glad,
man,
to have you here.
So, I like mornings.
Yeah, this is a morning podcast right now. I got my espresso, and yeah, he's got his dad face on from, you know, having such a great sleep schedule, a new father over here. But yeah, without any further ado, Billy, to start this off. So Papadocio just released their 9th studio album, To Live a Making, and it's absolutely amazing. To start this off, I want to talk about, what would you say are some of your personal favorites from the album?
I like, and first of all, I haven't heard someone say 9th, like out loud, and that just kind of threw me for a second. That's crazy. Probably The State of Things. I really like that one. I'm a big fan of like the interlude tracks. The one, like the first one, is one that it's called Family Orchestra, and I had tentatively named it that. And like, I normally, you know, my songs are what they are. I normally don't like say, hey, they're great or whatever, but like this was a fun one because like I had a sample of my voice and Melissa's voice and put it into a granular synthesizer, which is a sampling synthesizer that takes the waveform and can play different sections of it when you play the keyboard or pitch it up or down or whatever. So I had her sing a C and I sang a C, and then just like played all the parts of that first track. And then put Augie's heartbeat behind it because I had sampled it at the doctor's office at the OB the first time we heard it. And I was like, maybe, you know, this is cool.
Was the doctor like, what the fuck is this guy doing right now?
Kind of. And I was like, I'm going to put that in the song. And she was like, okay, like didn't believe me or whatever.
I love it.
Yeah, it originally had like a beat behind it, and it was like a banger, but we turned it into a chill thing, and it turns out it went right into not just a word pretty well. So I like that one because the story behind it is cool and it's really simple, but that's what you need sometimes. Like, you know, we have plenty of music that's like I barely understand it, you know. It's not like it's Dream Theater or anything, but it's just kind of crazy. So yeah, I like those two. Boss Battle is super fun. Xanadu is super fun. Those are kind of my jams on there. I dig them all, really.
Can you talk to me about the meaning behind the song, The End of the World?
Yeah. So the meaning Well, it just start the song started out a long time ago as just me testing out my old Juno 106, which was the first synthesizer I ever bought, and was bought in the classifieds of the Athens News in Athens, Ohio. And it was how I met Anthony, actually, because he wanted it and I got it for $150, by the way. Like, those are like $3,000 now, which, thank you everybody for helping me get that. So like, that's, you know, some backstory about that synthesizer, but it hasn't really been working. So I just recorded something on it. And it was just kind of living on my computer. And then we went to the studio, and I had recently lost two people who were really close to me. And, you know, it was pretty clear they're both dealing with some like mental health issues, and we all are. And addiction, and like, I certainly have been through that whole thing, and it's, you know, it's a real thing. So we were at the studio, and I hadn't like processed any of that really, and I was by myself in the back synthesizer room that we had made, and it was like, you know, there's everything you could ever want back there. And I just started singing into a vocoder, because like, so I've said this to Melissa forever, and like, for excusing my actions, like coming home at 4 in the morning, you know, super hammered, or, you know, a bender or something. And I'm just back in the day, you know, like, I'm good now, we're good now. But like, I would say, well, you know, whatever, it's not the end of the world, we're fine. Like, a lot of people say that. And I'd say that to myself a lot, knowing full well that, like, at some point you're going to have to deal with your mental health issues and deal with this addiction. And like, you're like, you know, the whole time that you're doing it. I mean, you say you don't, but like, you do. And so, like, it's not the end of the world. You know, you can do it if you want to. It's like about what you say to yourself to excuse your actions and, you know, your mental state, knowing full well that, like, or maybe you don't know. It's just like knowing that you need to try. You can do it if you want to. But if you don't, that's okay. And then you try again later, and you just kick the can down the road. And that's not the end of the world. You know, you think that you're going to know when you've hit the end of the world, but you won't, because you are either dead or unconscious, you know, and that's what that's about. Like, you won't know when it's the end of the world. Because the end of the world is for everyone else is when you die. And they're like, you go away for a long time, or, you know, because that's really who gets affected. So you'll never know when that happens, because you're probably gone. And like, and I just kind of sang that, not knowing what it meant at first, into this vocoder, and laid it down, and kind of went, gave it one more pass, and then like realized what I was saying, you know, and like,
wow,
just processed all that loss in the moment, and just like started. Of course I cry, but I've never cried like making a song. I don't ever, you know, my songs are always fun, like Geoglyph, and everyone is cool, and like, it's just have a good time, it's aesthetically pleasing, let's forget about stuff. And then that was just like the first time I'd ever kind of let something out, albeit using a vocoder, because I'm still like, you know, kind of like, I don't want to hear my voice that much. And but anyway, and so I just started like bawling uncontrollably and had to leave. And then I didn't listen to that song for the rest of the recording process, and then was finally able to like fix it up and show it to everybody. And luckily everybody was, you know, understood what I was trying to say. And it does convey an emotion, you know, like, however you want to take it, it's totally fine. But then Anthony had doctored it up and put Augie's heartbeat at the end of it. And was like, when Melissa and I listened to that for the first time, because I played it, the first cut draft that Anthony had sent over, like, I lost it and she lost it. And it's like,
whew. Oh my God.
So like, it like kind of processing loss, and now like the end of the world is definitely affecting other people, like my son. And, but then it's also about like rebirth at the end, you know what I mean? Wow. With that heartbeat in there. So that he hadn't told me that he was going to do that. And like, I didn't suggest it. And it was just like, Melissa said, like the whole day, she was just, you know, she was just ruined for the rest of the day. Cause we listened to it in the morning, like at this time. And it was just like, wow. So
amazing.
I'm pretty happy with how that turned out. Like I couldn't sing it for a long time. I couldn't play it. And we did at Sequence and it went swimmingly, I think. And yeah, that's the, I guess it's kind of a long-winded explanation of that, but
I love it. That's amazing, man. Wow.
Yeah. Thanks.
And a big thank you to the geniuses over at Thrax CBD for sponsoring us with their amazing products. Also want to give a big thank you to J&J Distribution, Ohio's premier Delta 8 and CBD wholesale supplier. Retailers, check out their brands, Cloud 8, Compassionate Buds, and Zaza. Got links in the description. And yeah, much love, y'all. Now back to the episode.
How would you say you feel about, like, when you think about the concept of the end of your life? Like, does that make you feel nervous or anxious, or like, are you like in the state of enlightenment where you're completely content? Like, well, how do you feel about death?
I mean, I'd say I have a, you know, I'm not like anxious about it, I don't think. I feel like when it happens, it's going to happen and it's part of life. So I don't like think about it a lot and I'm scared, you know what I mean, necessarily. I feel for, like, you know, the people that you leave behind is what more gets to me. Because, you know, it's everybody's had it happen to them when somebody they love goes, or, you know, even an acquaintance, you know, then you start thinking about it. So yeah, I guess I have an interesting relationship with death. Cause like, I'd never really processed anyone's death, really. Like, yeah, when I was little. Like
the end of the world, like, it's something that we escape from thinking about until those moments where we can't think about anything else. And then it's like, and then it really hits you.
Right. And I think that's okay. Like, you shouldn't be thinking about death all the time. I know some people have a lot of trouble with that, and, you know, and like there's a lot of therapy and psychedelic therapy now that can help you kind of deal with the fact that yes, we are all gonna die, and everyone who's ever lived is gonna die. And, you know, it's, so you kind of have to have like a healthy like, not fear, but like knowledge that it's going to happen no matter what you do. Like Bill Gates is a billionaire. He's just gonna die. Like, so like, it's kind of makes me laugh how much people like put their eggs in one basket with like money and power and popularity and all that. Like, so that's kind of like my relationship with it. Like, you're gonna die, dude. Like, what are you talking about? What are you doing? Like, it's like a loving nihilistic approach almost, you know, like I do care about stuff, but at one point, you know, you're on a rock flying around the universe at 26 1,000 miles an hour. That's following a sun that's flying through the universe at 40 kilometers a second. And you're just like some goop that is alive, you know? And you're going to die like everything else in the whole world. So, like, it's not as scary when you think of, I do that a lot, like, way into deep time and like stuff like that, because it kind of, it scares some people, but and it scares me too. It should, but it helps me like compartmentalize things that are like, oh man, I played a really shitty show the other day, or I wish we were playing this show, or we got paid more, or whatever, you know. I mean, sure, but have a good time while you're here too, man. Like, don't let it ruin you, because you're gonna die. So I don't know if that's healthy or not. It's just kind of how I look at it. But like, when other people die, it affects everyone a lot more, I feel like, than you, because you're not gonna know you're dead. You don't, like, I mean, I don't know, I haven't died, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it could just be overdose dead or driving doom dead. You don't know. Mm-hmm. I assume. I don't know, but you know. I didn't think I was going to talk about death at 8:30 in the morning, 8:50 in the morning, but I'm down.
The beginning of the world, the end of the world. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where we're at anymore anyways.
Yeah.
Well, on a different note, So Billy, you're a dad now since we've mm-hmm. last spoke. Congratulations on the release.
Sure. Yeah. It's pretty rad, man. It's cool. It's like one of the most psychedelic things that's ever happened to me, for sure. Like, it's so trippy still. So it's awesome.
I'd love to hear how being a dad, how you feel like that's changing you as a person.
I think it's just kind of reaffirming what we just talked about, how it's like, we're alive right now. Make it good for you and the people around you. And somebody doesn't like you, like, it's cool. You just have these things. You have these two people to really care about and make sure everything's okay. So, like, it's kind of pushed a lot of the extraneous bullshit out, at least of my, you know, maybe it's in my periphery, but it's like, it seems to be not as important as what I have at home. And that, you know, that's still means business, and you got to make sure it's everyone is getting what they need, but like, more so it's like, provide the love. And it's just reaffirmed that for me. So I feel like it's a good thing, definitely.
Do you feel like with what you've learned, like, you know, I feel like there's another paradox with being a dad, as you're, you know, we're kind of talking about, like, you have this extremely precious life in front of you, but then it also helps you realize, like you were saying, that not everything matters as much as it might seem in the moment. You know, like, it's like taking something very seriously and then taking other things less seriously.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel like how you're being shaped by this, like, if you could give yourself like 5-10 years ago some advice based on, you know, how you're being shaped now, like, what would you tell yourself?
Man. Slow down and, you know, go to therapy, dude. Slow down, go to therapy, and just chill, man. You don't have to, you're not missing anything if you stay home, you know. You're missing more by going out and partying or whatever. Like, that's, 'cause that's what I was doing 10 years ago. And somebody had to do it, you know, in the band. Somebody had to do it. So yeah, you're on a tour bus, but slow down, buddy. So that's probably what I would say.
I love it. I'd love to hear you talk about some of the specific things you might admire about each other member of Pop Dosio.
I admire Anthony's work ethic. I feel like I've said that before, but you know, it doesn't make sense how someone can be like that. Like, extremely passionate about what we do and what he does, you know, even outside of the band. I really admire that and hope to be getting more, you know, trying to be more like that, albeit probably in different areas. But and Sam, you know, he's my best friend in the world, grew up with him. I know what he's about to say. And then that goes in for like on stage too. Like, with musically, I admire his, like, I don't know, his brain works in music. Like, it just clicks. And, you know, he taught me how to play piano originally. He just like learned it in our basement. And I was like, that's cool. And then he was like, yeah, here's how you do it. And he just kind of started doing that. So like Sam's approach to music and learning music is just so passionate. And his brain is just, it's unreal. Cause like, I mean, I have it, but not as much as Sam. Like, it's just, something else is going on up there, and I don't think it's something you can learn. Like, you can get music theory and all that, and that's very important, and I'm trying to be more theory driven, but there's something to be said about not being as theory driven. So he'll like keep me in check, you know, with, I'll be like, let's do this, and I was like, yeah, with this, you know, and it makes more sense, kind of thing. So he can look at any song or any chord progression and just kind of with a couple tweaks turn it into something completely, you know, just beautiful. And I admire his musical brain and prowess for sure. So, and you know, Mike, I've never written a beat that Mike can't play, ever. I tried to, never. And he's the most optimistic person I've ever met in my entire life. And I admire that for sure. And, you know, Rob has, like, again, with kind of like with Sam, like the way that Rob's brain approaches music. Like, before he ever started playing in the band, I saw him in a trio cover band playing like Blue Sky by the Allman Brothers. And even the way he approached that song with like his passive bass and the tone that he, like, that's the tone, that the bass tone that I like is Rob's. That is when I'm writing a song, or if I listen to music, and I did, like, even before I knew that. Because a lot of times it's like too bright or it's too something. And that's, I base all bass players' tone and playing off Rob, and always have. He's also one of those people who can just play anything musically. He's always prepared, always. Any covers we're doing, any of our songs we're doing, always prepared. So I admire that about Rob, that he's always prepared, because I'm absolutely not always prepared.
Yeah. I want to try to ask you a strange question that I'm hoping you'll try to answer. What do you think they would say about you?
Oh man, I don't know, man. I really don't. I don't know. Like, Sam's answer might be different than everybody else. Never thought about that before.
They would just go through each of them, and Billy's Billy, you know.
Yeah.
Gotta love that guy.
probably. Like, I don't know. I think I'm good at like keeping cohesion between people, and like kind of whoa, we're all good here. This thinking about guy. It. Yeah, from outside the situation. I think I try to do that at least and not get so caught up in the minute details. I don't know if they'd say that because I don't know if they know that I actively try to do that. But that's the point. So, you know, I don't know. That's what I'd hope they'd say.
What advice can you give to people listening? And this is like aside from being in a band, just like in general, about... Mm-hmm. being a great teammate.
Always, well, first of all, you don't know what someone else is going through outside of your relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't fix that. So in order to be a good teammate, you know, you should take care of everything in your hula hoop, you know, that's what you can do. Let people have their, if they are really mad or regressing to like a childish form of themselves and being really difficult, like you can't really change that, but you can chill on the thought and pick it up another time, because usually that email comes through. Don't just fire it off, which I still do. Let it sit for a little bit with all of your decisions and all of the ways that you interact with people. Be there for them. Be there for your team. But also be there to like give the team some time and space. That's like the biggest thing on tour that a lot of people don't go on tour, so they don't know, is that like someone wake, but it doesn't have to be on tour. It could just be a day, you know. Someone, you wake up and you're just like, it's just a shitty day, man. And something else is happening and it's not you. You know, you aren't the person making this person have a shitty day. So just let them have the shitty day. Or let them have a shitty couple hours. And then kind of pick up where the conversation left off. And it'll be a much more productive, you know, interaction. So I would, yeah, that's my biggest, and I really need to take that into account a lot more. It's not easy to do, but I think that's, you know, if the world did that more, I think we would be in a better place. And so you can bring that into your microcosm and kind of try change it from the inside, bro.
I love it. And you can only control what you can control, right?
Exactly. That's so best. Hard. Yeah. Well, it's so hard.
But... So jumping back to the music side of things here, I'd love to hear, like, from your totally subjective opinion, like, no need for disclaimers that this is just your two cents. What do you think are some of the differences between the vast majority of artists and those select few artists that are like some of the greatest all time, some of the greatest in the world? Like, how do you think that, what are some common ways that the greatest have separated themselves with what they're doing? And not as much in their, creative process, but more so in like actually what they've made, what they're doing.
Well, this is also a really hard thing to do, is create what you want and don't play to the crowd and the audience. And like, I think that's no matter, and it can manifest in so many different ways. Like, you know, like, I don't know, Zappa, for example, is like the, you know, kind of almost epitome of that. Like, if you listen to Joe's Garage, it's like, what are you doing? What is this? This is crazy. That's what he wanted to hear. And then people wanted to hear it too. And if they don't, that's okay. You know, somebody's going to like what you do. You know, there's certain, I'm blanking on his name, Mark
Zuckerberg.
No, I don't remember. It's like a modern artist that's completely abstract and like, it's like squares. There's one in the Cleveland Museum of Art. Maybe it's not Mark, but whatever. He liked to draw squares, dude, and make it a certain color to put out a vibe. There is worth like $10 million now, like, and that doesn't matter. If it wasn't worth $10 million, that's what he wanted to see, and he created it. So like, the real ones create first of all what sounds good to them, you know. And then again, it could be anything. I mean, you can tweak stuff too. You can start with that idea because there's no wrong in art. I try to say that to people a lot because like, I am not the most theory driven perfectionist musician because that's not what I like. Like, I appreciate it, but I write what I want, and some people will come along for the ride, and it's okay if it's rough around the edges, because if it's not, did you even like make it, you know, like, or was it a prepackaged thing for a certain audience, you know? And that's, there's something to be said for that too. Like, it's hard to know what everyone's gonna like. It's hard to write a pop hit, dude. It's fucking hard. Some people do that really well, and you know, way to go you. I see your talent, and you knew what's going to be popular, but I'm sure those people still also write stuff that's like wild, you know, and it's out there. And I'm not saying pop music is bad. I love pop music. I go, you know, it's just, I feel like you got to have a weird, really weird outlet somewhere. Maybe it's just for you too, but like, if you don't get out all the weirdness, then maybe not, you know, maybe the real stuff isn't going to come out too. So just do what you like. And if it's like, again, there's just no wrong. Nothing is wrong. You can't do it wrong.
And everyone is cool.
Yeah. Everybody's cool, dude. Deep down for sure.
By the way, that song is a freaking bop. Absolutely. Yeah.
I was supposed to be a Dosio like back lounge exclusive thing, and then Anthony was like, no dude, let's put that on an album. And I was like, really? Okay. Man, I thought Everyone Is Cool is a hilarious title, but it also makes sense. Like, you know, you're just a person, man. You're cool. It's okay. You're being an asshole for sure.
I mean, that's not who you are, though. That's not who you are. That's just how you are right now.
Yeah, you're cool. You're cool, dude, for sure. Just
sit down.
Stop bombing Ukraine, bro. I mean, he's not cool. Let's be honest. Like, there's no, that's, you know, except certain people, I guess. But like, they were born cool. Like, when you. Like,
they were a cool baby.
Yeah, I just had one. Like, he's never done anything uncool. He farts and it's cool as shit, dude. Legitimately. Like, I'm like, nice. That's cool. You're doing it. So, when you were a baby, you were cool.
I don't know what happened since then, but at least we're still here.
A lot of bullshit happened after that.
Well, Billy, man, this has been so awesome. I'm really glad to get to talk to you here. If you listen this far, we got links in the description to check out To Live a Making. And yeah, you just mentioned Papadocio's Back Lounge. Think it'd be a good opportunity now for you to tell people about that and just how they can best support Papadocio.
Yeah, that's one of the best ways to support. It's access to like every show we've ever recorded, every album we've ever recorded. There's exclusive stuff on there. Like, I need to do a little more of it, but I'll do like I said, Everyone Is Cool was supposed to be just a song for people. Like I did a stick figure remix, the song Stick Figure, and that's on there, you know, stuff like that, along with, again, every single show we play. Going back, I think we have the most live recorded material on Bandcamp. I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
It's an operation over there. So yeah, check that out. There's, forget how many days of music, maybe it's years. I think it might be of live catalog stuff on there. And it's, you know, that's probably the best way to support us. And you get it, you know, people, I think we'll do special merch drops and all that. So yeah, it's pretty cool, man.
And we'll have a link to that in the cool description, so you can check that out. And just got a couple more questions for you here as we're starting to wrap up.
Cool.
What do you feel like is, like, all the leaders, all the bosses, all the person at the helm of anything you've been involved with in your life, kind of like beyond Papadocio, like, what would you say you could boil down your favorite type of leader? How would you describe that?
Well, you know, when I was like age 10 through like 18 or 17, I went to a camp that's the oldest camp in the country. It's in upstate New York, and they're really big on, it's called Camp Dudley. They're really big on the other fellow first, which, you know, you can take that way too much to heart and not think about yourself, but there's a healthy balance of like the people that you're working with, either working for, what do you want to say, for you? No, you're working with these people, like that, remembering again that you're just the same person. Like, you guys are the same. You're not better than anyone else. Listen to them. A real good leader, I feel, and I'm not saying I am at all, but like, listen when people are talking. Again, if they're having a day, give them some time. Just the whole, like, do this now, do that now, do this now, let's go. And sometimes that needs to happen, you know, I get it. But the people that you're working with will understand that if you don't, like, if it doesn't happen as often. Because a lot of times you don't need to, like, slam shit in. Like, so just listen, try to put yourself in their shoes. Give space, you got to think about stuff. You got to give time for everyone to think about what's happening, you know? So just not, and don't just, I don't know. You're working with people. It's not just you telling people what to do, you know? And yeah, just don't jump to ordering people around. Like, It's just, I think a lot of people think they're better than other people, and you're not. Everybody's cool here, man. Come on, just cool it. I think, yeah, just kind of putting the other fellow first, which is, yeah, like putting yourself in their shoes and working with them, giving space with them. Very important.
Well said. Very
important.
I like that. All you big boss mamas and big boss daddies out there.
Yeah, man.
Take some notes.
Yeah. From me. No.
Right now.
Do it.
What would you say is the best piece of advice anyone's given to you outside of like, you know, not taking things too seriously?
I don't know, man. The slow down thing is huge, which I didn't really take to heart for a long time. I'm sure there's multiple pieces of advice that I don't even remember, but have shaped me. Well, yeah, I think slow down. I think it came from therapy. Oh, go to therapy is a really big one too. Like, just do it. Just, even if you think you don't need it, everybody needs it. Like, I think that the slow down thing came from therapy and like just kind of, again, giving yourself time and people time to process stuff. When I slowed down during the pandemic, that's when I realized, oh man, I do not need to be ingesting this much of these substances all the time. Like, slow down, bro, and start. Yeah, so that's, that's what I would say. That probably was one from my therapist, one of the better pieces of advice.
Well, Billy, man, this has been awesome. Ending this, any final messages, any final words about, what Papa Dosio fans can be excited for, or just kind of anything you want to say to your fans out there still listening?
Yeah, well, if you're still listening, thank you for listening to me babble. Everybody, just slow down, man. That's cool. And Papa Dosio loves you. That's all I got, man. I mean, we've
Amen.
got plenty. Go to, check the tour schedule, obviously. And
Obviously.
say hi to me if you see me. It's cool. I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy.
Hell yeah. Billy Brouse, my man, thank you for your time, and hope to see some Papa Dosio shows and maybe even some brother shows around the corner.
Right on, bud.
But yeah, man, love all that you do. Thank you for putting this amazing album out and for joining me here, man.
For sure, anytime, dude. For real.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for tuning in. And a big thank you to Ticket Relief for sponsoring Weird Music Podcast. If you're an event organizer out there, Ticket Relief can help you keep your fees low while making sure all aspects of ticketing go smoothly. As well, Ticket Relief plants trees on behalf of every ticket sold with the events they work with. So, yeah, we've got a link in the description for you to check them out. And thank you to the rest of our sponsors. Much love, y'all.